The computer. Hello, Regis University colleagues, faculty, staff, and students. I am Bob Bowles, and I serve as the director of the Center of Information Assurance Studies here at Regis University. Today, we have the opportunity to discuss the current state of cybersecurity and what Anderson College offers students in the study of cybersecurity at the graduate level. We have the pleasure today to speak with Mr. Ken Quigley, the Director of Attack Surface Management at Cradlepoint, a subsidiary of Ericsson. He is also one of our affiliate faculty at Regis University. Ken, welcome.
Thank you, Bob, and great to be with you. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss the current state of cybersecurity and the best choices that our current students can make in seeking education in the fast-growing field of cybersecurity.
Ken, tell us a little bit about yourself, your past experience in cybersecurity, and your current role.
Absolutely, Bob. So I'm one of those folks that we see a lot of here at Regis and Anderson College. I'm a career changer. I started way back when I was actually an officer in the United States Army. And then when I left the Army, I was in manufacturing. And made the choice to go into information technology quite a few years ago. And then once I got into information technology, I found the new field of information security and really truly fell in love with information security. So I started off in manufacturing, and as I moved into information technology, one of the things that really got me interested is I actually read Stephen Northcutt's book, Network Intrusion Detection. And that book was fascinating to me because it talked about how you could attach your computer to the wire, to the network, and grab packets off the wire and figure out what was going on. And that was just totally fascinating to me. Of course, that's the beginnings of intrusion detection. And that's how I got into information security. And from there, I just have followed my career and really got into vulnerability management and identifying and communicating vulnerabilities to put me where I am today in attack surface management, where I look at any place where my company's data is processed, stored, or transmitted, and making sure that there are no vulnerabilities in that environment. So that's kind of my background and where I came from.
So, you know, what got you interested in cybersecurity?
Great question. And it was way back when I was a systems administrator working for Bombardier Capital. And, you know, I'll date myself a little bit here. We actually had an AS400 that was our mainframe for the company. And one of the things that I was asked to do was to set up a T1. And I'm like, well, what the heck's a T1? It was really interesting. And part of that was making sure that we were monitoring for unauthorized activity. And so I mentioned earlier that I grabbed Stephen Northcutt's book, Network Intrusion Detection. And it was really that combination of the requirements for my job and the Network Intrusion Detection book that it just lit a fire under me. And it really was very interesting to me as to what you could do with cybersecurity.
Thank you, Ken. So how did you become associated with Regis University?
So actually, I have a really good friend that I've known for many, many, many years. And he graduated from and started teaching at Regis University. And we in my discussions with him, he let me know that Regis had a master's program in networking and e-commerce. This was back before there was a cybersecurity degree. So I looked into it and decided I was going to go ahead and get my master's degree through Regis. And this was back in the early 2000s. And so I graduated from Regis. And then once I graduated, I was really, really interested in becoming an instructor and giving back to the community and helping new students in the transition into the cybersecurity industry. So for quite a while, I kept trying to get in here at Regis, and it was actually a interesting meeting when I was at Charter. Sherry Plant's masters came over to Charter to talk to us about internships and placement of some of our graduate students and so forth there at Charter. And I took the opportunity to talk to Sherry and said, "Hey, listen, I'm really interested." And so she got me hooked up with Christopher Garcia, and from there it's just moved forward and gotten very involved in teaching here at Regis and truly enjoy it.
Well, Ken, I can tell you we're certainly glad to have you on board. So where did you complete your education?
So it was at Regis. My undergrad was from Virginia Tech, which is I'm from the East Coast, lived there in Virginia. But my undergrad was in business management. And as I went through my career, I was drawn to the information technology industry. So I completed my master's here at Regis.
So let's continue on here more about the education here, Ken. So in your experience, are you a believer in cybersecurity certifications?
Absolutely. Certifications are a very good part of the your education program and basically letting people know that you have the skills that those certifications represent. That really, though, should be combined with traditional education, like a master's degree program here at Regis. And the master's degree program, the formal education gives you skills that a certification doesn't necessarily give you. Real big believer in certifications. I'm not a believer in what's called alphabet soup, though. And a lot of people, especially in the information security arena, will go out and get every single certification they can. So they've got these long lists of alphabets after their name. I think you should look at what you're doing, look at what you're interested in, and get the certifications that move you closer and further down that line in your career.
You know, Ken, that's excellent advice. I see that you are a big proponent of formal education. Why do you believe that this is so important?
So formal education teaches you far more than certifications ever will. Formal education provides the foundation that students need to seek out and find the answers themselves. Certifications, and it's really funny because my very first certification was a Microsoft certification. It was the Microsoft's security engineer, or I'm sorry, the administrative engineer there. And at the time, there was a joke that said, you can look at what the right answer is, and you can look at what the Microsoft answer is. And so certifications are designed to test, do you know what the Microsoft answer is or the Cisco answer, right? Formal education is about teaching you to seek out and find the answers on your own, so that you're not just memorizing things. You can solve problems and you can seek out those answers, without having to memorize things. So a good combination of formal education and certifications are really the best foundation for folks who want to be in either the information technology or the cybersecurity industry.
What types of security breaches have you dealt with in your career?
So I was going to answer this with the traditional, well, I could tell you, but no. Honestly, my background is more in vulnerability management, response and detection, risk assessment, and forensics. So fortunately or unfortunately, I have not had to personally deal with security breaches. I have helped out quite often when the security operations centers have been dealing with security breaches. But I've not actually dealt with them specifically. I have done quite a bit of forensics investigations, and I've looked at it from the perspective of the corporate forensics, which has to do most often with unacceptable use or harassment. And so that really, one of the biggest things that you look at when you're doing forensics investigations is documentation. So you ask, how do you deal with it? When you're doing a forensics investigation, documentation is key. And if you take my computer forensics course, there's a joke in the class that whatever the question is, if you answer it with documentation, that'll be the right answer. And it's, kind of a joke, but the reality is it's so very important to make sure that when you're doing those type of investigations, that you're documenting everything that you do, what you're finding, and so forth. So you ask, how do I deal with breaches? Not so much breaches, but forensic, it's through having a proper framework and documenting what you do.
Thank you, Ken. So, in your opinion, what do you think presents the greatest security threat to businesses and organizations today?
Great question, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about risk than threat, because it's really what's the risk that faces business and organizations today, and that's really important because often as cybersecurity professionals, we don't put things in terms of risk, and our business partners are always looking at risk. So when we talk about what the biggest risk to business and organizations today, we can define that by looking at threat and vulnerability. And so to have a risk, you have to have a threat and a vulnerability. So what are the biggest vulnerabilities today? I would say when it comes to vulnerabilities, it's not doing the regular hygiene that we need to do. We're not patching when we should be patching. We're not looking at our software to make sure that the software we're developing doesn't have vulnerabilities in it. So misconfigurations, unpatched systems represent the biggest vulnerabilities. So who is it that takes advantage of that, right? That would be the threat part of risk. And right now, I think nation state sponsored terrorism, cyber hacktivists, ransomware actors, they all represent the biggest threats to industry today. And we see this in what's going on in the world today. I mentioned that I'm ex-military, and one of the things that combatants usually try to do is disrupt the enemy's infrastructure. And this has traditionally been done with arms and men and things like that. Today, it takes a cyber hacktivist or a state-sponsored terrorist sitting behind a computer going after our critical infrastructure to take down certain things like attacks on pipelines, attack on electric grid, attack on our water. All of these things are significant risks and things that are much more difficult to defend against than a traditional military action. So what's the biggest risk to industry today? Not patching our systems and then having a cyber attack against that that then turns around and disrupts our infrastructure, our national infrastructure.
Thank you, Ken. You know, I've always heard that the insider risk is the greatest risk of all. So, what internal factors do you think increase security risk?
I think one of the biggest things is not understanding where we fit as individuals and as members of a corporation or whatever, where we fit in making sure that items are secure. Everyone needs to understand that their role is cybersecurity. Too often people say, you know what? That's the cybersecurity people's business. I don't have to worry about cybersecurity. So when we have an insider threat, often people don't recognize that. They don't pay attention to it. They don't live by the if you see something, say something mantra. And it's very, very important because being security aware and paying attention to what's going on to the left of you, to the right of you, and reporting things that seem anomalous is very, very important. So, apathy, not understanding where you fit in cybersecurity, all increase the internal threat.
That's very interesting, Ken. Thank you. How do we instruct our students to look for security flaws in our organizations?
I think one of the biggest things is a solid security awareness program. And boy, howdy, we've had security awareness around for a very long time. And it's always the same stuff, right? It's take you through phishing emails, take you through this, that, and the other thing. But I think it's incumbent upon the security professionals to make the training more interesting and more pertinent to our partners, to our stakeholders, and so forth. So going through the security training is so very important in training people on what's going on in the industry and what they should look out for, but putting it in a format that is of interest to them that they're going to pay attention to. So that might involve partnering with them and talking with them, hey, what's the best way to deliver this message, right? Instead of force feeding our stakeholders and our partners, we should be working with them to make our message more impactful.
So what you are advocating is getting buy-in, correct?
Absolutely. Getting buy-in. And there's the concept of security champions that often is used in corporate America. And those are the folks that are not security professionals, but are very security conscious. And if you identify those in your environment and you partner with them, they can go a long way to help convince other people what they should be looking for and why security is so very important.
Kind of as a follow-on to that question, Ken, is so how do you get your team members and stakeholders to adhere to security's best practices?
So very, very similar answer, and it's all about, as you said, Bob, buy-in, right? How do we make it pertinent to them? It's one thing to sit down and say, hey, you need to pay attention to security because we could lose access to our database, or something like that. That's an abstract idea. If we sit down with our stakeholders and say, if we lose access to our database, you're going to have to re-enter all of that information, and it's going to put us way behind. And oh, by the way, you're probably going to have to work weekends. Now, all of a sudden, they're very interested in making sure that they keep things secure because it's pertinent to them. They have an impact. Too often, it's abstract. Too often, it happens to somebody else. And so, if we can show with our partners how if they adhere to best practices, it's going to benefit them it's going to benefit the company, I think we have a much better chance of getting them to adhere to those practices.
You know, Ken, we hear all the time, and especially when you're talking about vulnerability management, we hear terms like, well, that's a critical risk, that's a high risk, that's a moderate or a medium risk, that's a low risk. So, how do we educate our students to determine the severity of a discovered vulnerability?
I could probably talk for hours on this one. The best way is to look at industry standards. And there's a very good industry standard out there called CVSS. It's the Common Vulnerability Scoring System. And CVSS comes to us from the National Vulnerability Database, which is supported by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST. And it is a very quantitative way of looking at a vulnerability and assigning it a criticality. So it takes into account all kinds of really interesting things like, is it remotely exploitable? How difficult is it to exploit? Is there an exploit in the wild? Is it being actively exploited? All of these factors go in to coming up with that CVSS score. And fortunately, when we have a vulnerability, more than often, the NVD has already done a CVSS score. So you can go out and look it up and say, oh, okay, NVD says that this is a 8.5, which is a high, or a 9.8, which is a critical. And it gives us a language that we can talk to our business partners about. Because one of the biggest challenges is never to be the boy who cried wolf or Chicken Little, the sky is falling, right? When we go to our business partners and we say, this is a critical, you need to do this today. Having the CVSS score and being able to point to it and say, this is a CVSS score 10, which is the highest. I've seen three 10s in my career. You see a 10 and it means you got to do something. That gives us that common language to be able to talk to our business partners. So I would advise our students to become very, very familiar with the CVSS process. And you can calculate it on your own. There are calculators out there online. You can just do a Google for CVSS calculator, and it'll walk you through the whole process. So if you do discover a vulnerability that doesn't have a score, you can do it yourself. I think that's the best way for determining the criticality of that vulnerability.
Thank you. Very, very interesting, Ken. Thank you. So, how important are the soft skills, the communication and writing skills for new cybersecurity students?
They are critical. We talk about CVSS. They're CVSS 10s. They're critical. We are not able to communicate with our business partners. We're not able to influence them to do what we need them to do without these communication skills. And trust me, I've been doing this for a very long time. Too many people get into cybersecurity and they think, oh, well, if I just tell them it's a critical vulnerability, then they'll go out and fix it. Nope, that doesn't happen. It gets slotted in there with all the other business priorities. And so if we are not able to communicate and use the language and use the techniques that our business partners are familiar with, we're not going to get our message across. We're not going to be able to influence our partners into doing what we need to do to secure the business. And I say influence because that's what it really is. We do not have the opportunity to put mandates out there. That's not our job. We have to be able to present it. We have to be able to influence them, show them why, in terms they understand, it's important to incorporate cybersecurity into their business plans. So written and verbal communication skills, incredibly important.
You know, Ken, I mean, we hear all the time how the cybersecurity landscape is changing and the threats and risks, they change from day to day. So I'm sure it's extremely important to stay current and stay informed. So do you belong to any user groups or professional organizations? Can you explain how you stay informed in this field?
Sure, absolutely. One of the first things I'll say is, and I'll come back to this, it's a team effort. Okay, and I'll explain why in a minute. But I subscribe to several blogs and email lists, including CISA's alerts. CISA is the governmental cybersecurity awareness organization. I subscribe to their newsletters. I subscribe to Krebs on Security. I'm part of ISACA and ISC Squared, both really great organizations. But as you point out, Bob, it's incredibly difficult to stay informed. It's incredibly difficult to stay on top of everything that's going on out there. And so hopefully you find yourself as part of a team. And one of the things that I work with my teams on is making sure that we cooperate. And I never expect any one individual to be up on everything that's going on. It's not possible. That's an unacceptable ask of any individual. But tackling it as a team and looking at different areas. So I might have a team member that is looking at threat intelligence. I might have a team member that's looking at vulnerabilities. I may have another one that's looking at what the state-sponsored terrorists are doing. And so they all keep tabs on their areas. And when there's something of import, something that we need to take a look at, they will come back to the team and we'll look at it, we'll triage it. And then to communicate it out to our business partners, we have an emerging threat process, or what I like to call the big red button. And so if we have to hit the big red button, that means that my team has looked at it, we've evaluated it, and there's something that we really need to pay attention to. So staying on top of things, it's really difficult to do as an individual. I would say subscribe to as many newsletters, belong to good organizations like ISACA, but partner with other people. Otherwise, you're going to miss something.
Good information and good advice, Ken. In our final moments today, what advice do you share with our students, staff, and faculty regarding becoming properly prepared to enter or evaluate their work positions in this field?
So I would say the biggest advice I would have is cybersecurity has evolved a lot in the 20 plus years, 25 years now, goodness, that I've been part of it. And it used to be that you could be a jack of all trades, master of none. That's not possible anymore. It's just too broad. So find an area that you're interested in and try to map out your career. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to be? And look at all aspects of cybersecurity. Too often I talk to students, too often I talk to employees, and they go, I want to be a pen tester. I want to get into pen testing. That's the glamorous, and quite honestly, it's not that glamorous. But that's where people want to go. There's so much else out there. I would say really take a good hard look at where you want to be. What is it that really interests you? And try to aim your career into those positions. And one of the biggest things that I would say is don't be afraid to pay your dues. And that means you're never going to know everything, but you have to get that foundational knowledge. So even if you get your master's degree, even if you go out and get your certification, a SEC Plus or one of the entry-level certifications, do some time as a SOC analyst, a Security Operations Center analyst. Do some time looking at logs and trying to identify malicious activity. It's going to pay dividends as you grow in your career. You can't just graduate from college or get your certification and instantly be a pen tester or a risk analyst or something like that. You have to have that experience. So don't be afraid to go out there and pay your dues, get that experience, and then build your career from there.
Well, Ken, I want to thank you so much for being our special guest today. The information that you have given us has been very informative and very helpful. I just like to say, I know the future is very bright for anybody who wants to enter into the cybersecurity industry. For those of you that are listening, there's about 715,000 open cybersecurity positions right now in the US alone. There's 23,000 in the Denver Boulder area. And the forecast for cybersecurity analysts for the next 10 years, they're forecasting a 30% growth. So the field is green, so to speak. I tell you, I've never seen an industry that has the need that cybersecurity has right now. Just in my entire career, I have never seen that. If we were short medical emergency or first responders, we would have a national outcry right now. And it concerns me that we have all these open cybersecurity positions. We can't turn out students fast enough to fill them. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. So if any of you would like to find out more about our master's program or any of our graduate certificates, please contact me at rbowles@regis.edu. That's rbowles@regis.edu. Or you can call me anytime at 719-331-7582. Everyone needs to remember that cyber attacks are a sad reality in our digital world, and they are increasing every day. Identity theft is growing exponentially, and as long as hackers can profit from their efforts, they will continue to steal our information. So everyone, please stay safe, and remember that cybersecurity is everybody's business. Ken, once again, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the opportunity.